It's not a cartoon. It's anime.
Yes, we are back. Welcome to another episode of Animation. Squad is here. Myself, Brennan, Ice, Rob.
What's up?
And this week, you know what we do. We do one off. We do debates. We talk our ish on here. So we do. This week is Brennan's pick.
Brennan,
I Am Blooded Orphans. A season two. Do we need actual for this? Because we
I'm gonna run through it super fast. We did it, but I'm just gonna do a super quick recap of it. This is Iron Blooded Off. It's a Iron Blooded Orphans. It is a Gundam series. We're watching season two. If you want to see my full factual actuals, then go back to our season one. We did the whole entire review of that. It was awesome. Really quick, the director is Tatsuyuki Nagai. He did Gundam 00, which is my other only Gundam I ever watched that I really liked. Teradora and Anoa the Flower, and we saw that day. The writer is Mari Okada. She's the most acclaimed, very, very one of the most acclaimed writers. She is. It's a she, I think. Yep, she is one of the most acclaimed and accomplished writers in anime. Okay, she won the 16th Anime Kobe Award. I think you guys remember that. I was like, yo, she won this crazy big award that a woman's never won before. And the second writer to ever win the award. Normally directors get them. The show's original was run from the October 2015 through March 27th, 2016. It deals with real life problems such as war, child soldiers, slavery, poverty, politics, and corruption. It's shonen. The show came out before the manga, which is crazy, which is still ongoing.
That's crazy.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And this is a production of Sunrise Studios, which is one of the most OG studios in anime. As you can see in the corner of Rob's screen, Keenan's screen right now.
Well, both of them.
And Rob's.
Yeah, both.
So, Sunrise, aka Bandai, they did all the Gundams, Cowboy Bebop, Code Geass, Inuyasha, unfortunately, Gintama. Mm. They've done a lot. And this series is on Netflix and on Crunchyroll.
You said it's Bandai? That's aka Bandai? Or are they the same? What do you mean by that?
I think that Bandai is a subsidiary of Sunrise.
Okay.
But let me look into that while we're waiting.
Okay. Wait. Season 2 is not on Netflix, is it?
I believe it is, actually. But go ahead, Rob, do the recap, and I'll check all those things.
Yeah.
All right, Rob, jumping to your recap, brother.
For sure. So jumping right into season two, after a brief intro with Orga and Mikazuki talking about like what's next for Tekadon, they're standing next to a memorial of all of those who died in season one. We get a recap of, what's happened since we last saw them. Tekadon is famous now for their huge battle on Earth, and Taiwan loves them for making them rich, which, they got the rights to mine half metal on Mars, which is a big deal. So they get promoted to full membership. And Tekadon, like themselves, they're doing really well. They're expanding their operation on Mars. Biscuit's family farm has got some new plants and stuff. They even opened up an orphanage there as well. Kudelia has come up in power. And so it's been good for everybody. She's become like the symbol of the Mars independence movement. And she's opened up this business called Admos that helps kind of run the half metal mining operations for like Taiwaz and those guys. Things are more shaky on Earth, where Tekadon has opened a new base following their victory against Galahorn. Earth's defenses have been destabilized and war and violence has become way more common everywhere, creating even more orphans and child soldiers as now people are like, hey, those guys in Tekadon did pretty great with their mobile suits, those kids, so we should get some of our own. Orga wants to fix it all and wants to do it the fastest way possible. So, finally, in the end, he's like, I eventually want to go legit. But to do that, I got to get there as fast as possible. Next, we meet one of Tekadon's new recruits, Hush, who goes to wake up Mikazuki and kind of talks to himself about how useless Mikazuki's been since he's only got one eye and one good arm. But, people are kind of like, man, you're new. You haven't seen what this guy can do. And later in a field, as Shino has the new recruits running laps. He and some other recruits kind of look on as, some other new guys, Dante, Maze turning into mobile suits against, you know, some of Naze's wives. Hush wishes he could have the AVS surgery, you know, makes the best mobile pilots, you know, he wants to be out there doing his thing. But Eugene, who's now second in command, is like, hey, you know, we're trying to build a world where that's not really going to be needed. So elsewhere, Orga's trying to get used to the pencil pushing work it takes to be in charge when he gets a call from Naze and his direct report at Taiwaz. Orga still wants more for Tekadon, but Naze is like, hey, you know, slow down a little bit. People get jealous when others, you know, stars start to rise quickly. And, you know, you could make more enemies than friends, but their strength is undeniable. And Naze's turbines are helping them, you know, to make new mobile suits and also fix the Gundam frames they already have. Increase the Martian city, this businessman, Gyojin, is trying to pressure Kudalia into letting him take over this tour she's having for a bunch of VIPs. But she smartly turns him down, though, knowing like his group is kind of fading in power and he's just looking for a meal ticket. But desperate people do desperate things. And when he gets back to his car, he calls up some shadowy contacts. Kudalia reaches out to Tekadon to let them know, like, hey, this tour I'm doing, I'm going to need some security. And Orga's like, we need to get Mikazuki back from the turbines ASAP. And he later tells everybody, like, hey, we're going to be doing this operation. And, you know, Hush and the others start to wonder, like, hey, what's this first battle going to be like for us? Elsewhere, what remains of Gjallarhorn, council members meet up. We see McGillis is still trying to consolidate power, grow his influence by getting involved with Mars, which is usually a territory that belongs to this other dude, Rustal. A few people get angry, but Rustal's like, hey, you know, no problem. Let the best man win kind of thing. After all, he still has the strongest fleet since he's in charge of, like, outer space, you know, defense for Gjallarhorn. Back on Mars, a group of pirates hired by Gyojin called Dawn Horizon attack the VIP tour, and Tekadon launches into that battle. Hush gets to see it up close in a mobile worker, but things get dicey when the pirates break out their own mobile suits. Shino Dante and another new guy named Ride or Ride, I'm not really sure about the pronunciation there. They take their mobile suits out to meet them, but start to get outnumbered. But of course, Mikazuki arrives with Barbados just in the nick of time, ready to turn the tide. And Hush and the others just...
Bro, that entrance. Hold on a second. That entrance. He was just like, oh, I can't like descend any further. He's like, just drop me, bro. And just started shooting the ground with his gun to slow his descent. I was like, all right, let's go.
Yeah. Hush and the others are kind of just watching on as Mikazuki's just wiping out these Dawn Horizon pirates, showing why he's known as the devil. But when they run, he can't chase him down because he put too much strain on Barbados during that crazy landing. Both Tekadon and Dawn Horizon have to regroup after, you know, what is basically Tekadon victory. Gyojin yells at the pirates for losing to a bunch of kids and asks, like, hey, how are you going to make this right? And they're like, this is personal now. In fact, you're not even part of this equation anymore. We're going to be doing this just on our own. We'll make sure Tekadon is you know, destroyed. And they clearly don't respect Gyojin. Gyojin is trying to rein them in, calls up Noblesse Gordon, who's even just like, that guy's useless. He literally calls him worthless. Tekadon regroups. Orga sends Kudalia to the farm for safety. And though he doesn't want a direct confrontation with Dawn Horizon, you know, since they're a much bigger outfit, he knows it's really only a matter of time before his troops fix their damage. And, you know, they prepare for their new suits from the turbines for delivery to Earth. So some of the new guys are shaken after this first fight, and Akihiro's just like, hey, we're all free now. You know, you can stay or you can go. You don't have to be here. But we get some reunions, first with Mikazuki and Atra and Kudalia, Thruple, and then the Hitler mustache Toto shows back up, tells Thruple. Eugene, I mean... Where's the lie? Then the Hitler mustache Toto guy, he shows back up and tells Eugene, hey, McGillis wants a meeting. Orga gives him a call, and they seem to have a common interest, destroying Dawn Horizon. McGillis is just like, I'm going to send my assistant Isurugi. Basically, he's already on the way. He's going to help you in destroying those pirates because, like, they've gotten so big, they're starting to impact Earth. So we need to take care of this problem together. Orga is suspicious, but takes the offer, you know, again, wanting to get to where he has to go as fast as possible. So he takes his plan to the big boss at Taiwaz, and even though he thinks they're outmatched by the pirates, he gives them permission, despite some of the people kind of being like, hey, like, are you sure we can rely on these kids? On Earth, things aren't going well. Chad, who Orga left in charge, you know, argues with his Taiwaz rep about Mars HQ kind of leaving them high and dry while tensions are rising between them. Chad trusts Orga, though, you know, decides to wait, whereas this new guy, Mr. Radis, is sort of like, they're just killing us right now. Elsewhere, Aston and Takaki talk about like how despite all the trouble they're having, they kind of prefer life on Earth. Or on Earth. Back on Mars, Hush is trying to talk with the old man about becoming a mobile suit pilot, saying, you know, he'll get the AVS surgery. But everybody's like, you're crazy. You're too old. That could kill you. He doesn't care. Starts to get worked up. But Mikazuki shows up and, you know, puts that dude in like an arm bar. And it's a problem. And that dude just sort of takes off, kind of yelling at Mikazuki, like something about like, I can't believe your surgery worked when it didn't work for other people. Later, Hush tells one of his friends about how when he was younger, basically he had a fellow orphan that, you know, had the surgery, had been because he wanted to get money to bring back to all the other kids. But the surgery didn't take. He became paralyzed and then ended up killing himself so he wouldn't be a burden. It's a
that
sad
was so
story.
Sad.
It was sad. Real bummer. Yeah. And he tells his friend, like, I want to get the surgery so I can be stronger than Mikazuki. And his friend tells him, good luck. Good luck with that. out in space, Rustall and his Galahorn lackeys are, you know, rushing to take out the Dawn Horizon pirates before McGillis can get the credit. And they have a mysterious ace up their sleeve, this masked mobile suit pilot who bears a grudge against McGillis and Tekadon. And speaking of Tekadon, they have launched into space with some of Naze's wives as backup to meet with their Galahorn contact, who is scouting info on the Dawn Horizon pirates. Everybody's a little on edge. It feels a little weird to be working with Galahorn for once. And clearly there's some trust issues because when Isurugi shows up without the rest of his fleet and tells Orga they've spotted three Dawn Horizon ships that they should attack right now without the rest of the Galahorn fleet, Orga's a bit suspicious about the rush. But he agrees, you know, hey, we might be able to get the surprise on them and we can get their leader. And he wants credit for the victory. He updates Mikazuki on the plan. It's like, you're our best hope of getting that leader alive. Of course, there was a catch. When Tekadon arrives, they find out it's not three ships. It's all 10 of Dawn Horizon's fleet with most of them, like, their powers off so they could hide their numbers. Dawn Horizon's lured them into a trap. Smart move. Their leader, this guy Reuters, reaches out and tells them to surrender, but Orga's like, hey, it's you who should be apologizing. And before long, they're scrambling the mobile suits to fight it out, even though Tekadon is outnumbered and surrounded. Marabit, the Taiwaz rep that works with Orga, says, you know, hey, we can still retreat with minimal damage, but his plan is literally just to punch right through the blockade, hold out until the rest of Galahorn's able to arrive, and then capture Reuters for Tekadon. Despite the pirate's superior numbers, they're really no match for Tekadon or their Gundam frame. Mikazuki does his thing, but Akihiro also emerges with his upgraded Gujin frame, now with like four gun arms and just this crazy huge like bolt cutter thing. And Tekadon is taking out pirates left and right with like minimal losses. Combined with Eugene's fancy flying, they're able to outmaneuver the pirate ships and break their lines. And Orga pulls back the mobile suits to refuel so they can buckle in for that long haul. Meanwhile, the pirates send out their human debris pilots that they know will just fight to the death because they got no other choice. But Mikazuki's got no problem with them either. So Reuter sends out his twin pirate first mates to do what they can. And the pirate turns are able to do some minimal damage, mostly because Akihiro and Mikazuki are refueling. But the tide starts to turn against them when the rest of the Galahorn fleet arrives from hyperspace. But it's not the ones that they were hoping for. Instead of McGillis's fleet, it's the political rival, Rustall, who's you know, showed up with his people. Sensing they're back against the wall, Reuters launches his own mobile suit to cover his fleet's retreat. But in addition to Tekadon, McGillis's troops looking for him, two Galahorn agents from Rustall fleet, this guy Eok and Julieta launch their mobile suits, and it's a race to see who can get him first. And it's tough part because Orga's just saying like, hey, don't attack any of the Galahorn, we don't want to like cause any problems or fighting there. So Julieta rushes in to Reuters while Eok stays behind and snipes, but Isurugi, you know, he gets involved, you know, grabs Julieta, kind of plays that defense that Mikazuki really can't. Mikazuki's able to, you know, fling the pirate brothers into her. So, you know, and she just like, she and Isurugi just kill those dudes off pretty much no problem because they weren't paying attention. All alone, Reuters is left to fight Mikazuki, who just pummels him with Barbados, and he surrenders, giving Tekadon and McGillis the win. After the fight, Reuters tells Orga that Dawn Horizon isn't the only enemy that they have anymore, that, you know, more will be on the way. And Orga says, we'll just destroy them, too. Back at Taiwaz, the boss is super happy with Tekadon once again, decides to give them the rights to their new half metal mine on Mars. And sure enough, this red haired underling starts, you know, complaining and getting jealous. And, you know, it's Naze who he's worrying that, you know, Orga lacks the ability to play politics and win in ways other than just using brute force. And though he makes his bosses happy, Orga is he's making more enemies for himself for Tekadon with every victory. Later, Mikazuki is leaving cafeteria when Hush confronts him, you know, brings up the whole pilot thing again. And Mikazuki's just like, all right, you know, I'll talk to Org about it. Basically, because this dude's just like, I want to become stronger than you. And Mikazuki's like, okay, you got the right attitude. But first, he and Org pay a visit to Mr. Gyojin. They're like, you caused us a lot of damage, you know, man. And so you can either pay us now or we lost a lot of lives. We can send you up to heaven so you can apologize to those people yourself.
With some gangsta ass shit to say, boy.
Feet on the table.
Yeah.
That was hard.
Yeah, he tries to weasel out of it, but Orga has thought of everything. And when it's clear he's got no money to pay them, Mikazuki just executes him.
Dog.
At the farm.
He made a call. And he ended up, Tekadon already.
They were already there.
Like, hey, get Gjallarhorn. Aren't they on their way? Like, what's going on? Tekadon's here. They're intimidating. He's like, they said we're on our own. And then you hear that guy get shot. It's just like, oh, shit.
It's bad news.
He had it all planned out. That was gangster.
That was the picture that I was looking for my background. I was looking for that particular picture of him shooting that dude, but I couldn't find it in time.
Gotcha. At the farm, Atra talks with Cadelia, you know, on her last night at the farm. She's seen all the good things that Tekadon is trying to do, but feels guilt, you know, her lack of diplomatic skill led to this and, you know, the death of Gyojin. Atra tries to argue, you know, like, hey, it was that guy that brought in the pirates, but Cadelia's just like, as long as we keep trying to solve violence with violence, like, we're only going to continue to create the problems we're trying to solve. And Atra is just like, well, hopefully, you know, you'll be able to fix that one day, and then we'll all be able to come live on the farm. Tekadon and the turbines start to get their new half metal operation running, something that is sure to bring in way more money than the farm. But while they're digging, they find something interesting, another buried Gundam frame, one that Shino hopes he'll be able to pilot. And they also say they found something else much bigger. In space, Mikazuki, Orga, and Maribit meet with McGillis, who's, again, super happy with the results. And helped with arrest the remaining members of Gyojin's group. Orga is a little less pleased, though, considering the complications with Gjallarhorn and, you know, the problems with Rustal at the battle. You know, he says there's still work to be done. You know, McGillis is like, I'm trying to weed out that corruption and I'll need your help, and offers his hand as an ally to help him beat Rustal. And, you know, Maribit is anxious about it, but Orga sees another opportunity to further his goals and agrees, shaking McGillis's hand. This last episode,
which is crazy. I'm just saying that moment right there. I'm sorry. That moment right there, to think that Gjallarhorn, that now Tekadon has a agreement with Gjallarhorn and Taiwaz. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, yo, like, they're backed by the two biggest organizations there are now.
Absolutely.
Go on, that's it. Sorry.
Parts of Gjallarhorn. There's other parts,
yeah, parts
not so
of
much.
Yeah, good point.
Kudeli gets a call from Makanai, that's the guy, her prime minister friend that she and Tekadon got elected in this end of season one. He's saying, you know, hey, with the help that Tekadon's forces have, you know, been on Earth, they're going to have a ceremony, basically making it official. But Kudeli says, you know, she can't make it. She still has too much things to do right now on Mars. And he warns her, you know, take your time, as the shortest path always has unintended consequences. So I'm sure we'll see more of that. On Earth, some of the Tekadon forces are asking Takaki what the plan is, you know, for what happens after they finish training the troops on Earth. But Takaki isn't really sure. They also have suspicions about the Taiwaz Rep Radis, but Takaki assures them, like, hey, he's part of Tekadon now. You know, that makes him family. We got to trust our family. Later, he and Aston go to check on Chad, who's getting ready for his meeting, getting, you know, dressed up in a suit. Soon enough, Radis shows up and is just like, hey, you guys are responsible for the outside security. Only, you know, Earth forces are going to take care of stuff inside. And when he leaves, they're all kind of like, hey, he's acting a little different and arguing with us less. You know, maybe he's warming up to us, or maybe he's decided we're just too dumb to understand and still listening outside. He's like, no, I think you're dumb. Heading home, Takaki starts to wonder, you know, what life is, you know, better for him and his sister going back home to Mars, or, you know, making a new one there on Earth. And on Mars, you know, they get the mobile suit delivery ready for Earth to prepare, and they're getting it all prepared and talking about how excited and proud they are of Chad, you know, rising from human debris to being in charge of, you know, their Earth operation. And Hush starts to wonder, you know, hey, if there's going to be another battle, you know, if Mikazuki's going with this delivery, I want to go too. Meanwhile, Eok and Juliet are apologizing to Rustal for letting Reuters go, but he says, like, it's no problem. Mars is Tekadon's territory, and, you know, I got a plan to mess with them on Earth. And, you know, a contact there is going to be making sure that, you know, things get taken care of and they aren't implicated.
Hey, later. Shit.
later, Julieta asked the masked man, you know, what he's done to deserve Rustal's attention and favor, even though he's new. And he kind of counters with, like, a lot of people were saying the same thing about you when you rose through the ranks. But she's like, that's why, you know, that's why I love this guy. He, you know, I didn't have any power or reputation, but he recognized me for my skill and as a pilot and kept me close. So, at the end, at the official meeting on Earth, Chad tells Takaki, you know, you're in charge as long as I'm in the meeting. But while that meeting goes down, there is an attack. A bomb goes off, and Chad tries to protect Makanai. And since they're stuck outside, nobody in Tekadon can really tell what's going on or if they're okay. And at a bar in the distance, we see that Radis is drinking with Rustal's contact, Galen, confirming that he sold them out and set them up. And Galen is like, you know, Radis could be sending these kids to war. And he's just like, these aren't children. These are wild animals. And he's like, I got allergies or something like that. It's chaos with some of the soldiers wanting to get revenge. But Takaki, you know, wants to do the right thing, be responsible, wait for orders from Mars. Unfortunately, Radis is running interference and telling both sides, you know, the other's too busy to talk and neither really knows enough to not trust him. Luckily, Orga knows something isn't right and scrambles everybody to take off for Earth to help, but it's going to take him 3 weeks to get there. And war on Earth is like about to break out at any time. Meanwhile, bad things, you know, get worse when Radis, pretending to offer help, introduces Gala to Takaki, and as basically the commander of Earth's forces, and Takaki, being in way over his head, just accepts it as truth. And we're going to see what happens to these poor kids on Earth next time.
Bro, that cliffhanger, I'm just like, I was like, I'm ready to watch the next episode. Like, I want to see this motherfucker get shot by Mika. That's what I want to see. You know, yeah. That's the feeling you have at the end of it. It's like, so this guy just got shot. No, this guy's the one who really needs to get shot.
Thanks.
Yeah. I feel like we definitely, for how we do the episodes, just always leave on somewhat of a cliffhanger. Like, damn it, we got to wait till the next.
Well, it's a decent anime, because we were watching, you know, we were watching Kuroko no Basketball. I didn't give a shit. We're watching, you know what I'm saying? Gangsta, I was just like,
There was no stakes in Kuroko, I guess. Yeah. But thank you, Rob, for the recap as always, man. Mm-hmm. Good job in the recap.
Thank you.
Let's get into the question portions of the show. First question, man. I mean, this first episode of season two, shit popped off, and these soldiers were like, yo, wait a second, man. People really died out here in these streets. Would you stay in Tekadon, or would you walk away as a soldier?
Right. Man, I really love the way that was a really good question set up, Keenan. I can't even front. Like, that was well done. Okay. But for me, I think there's a few variables you have to consider. If I'm a human debris and all I know are these kids around me, and I've already had friends die, like, I'm probably riding or dying. I'm probably here for it. But kid Brennan, who has a loving family, loves to play basketball and video games, still scared to talk to the prettiest girls at school, that kid, no. That kid would have been like, oh, this is not a war game. And I would have been like, nah, I'm good. Actual Brennan today, if I was in that situation, depends on what I'm defending. If I'm defending my way of life and the things that I love and I truly believe it's something that we got to do, then I'm here for it. But in general, no, I can't. I'm. They're like, you have the right. You could go wherever you want to go. I'm like, this is the last place I'm going to be. It's right here.
Rob?
Yeah, I mean, similar answer. In real life, no, I wouldn't put myself in that situation. But if I'm like human debris and I'm there in the first place, I'm staying, because I know the situation isn't much better anywhere else. And these places, it seems like they got some pretty good bennies, you know, like maybe, you know, work. I'm free here. I can walk away if I want. I know I always have that option. So with that, just being able to have the choice, and a lot of other places, a lot of those other pirates that are just like, go on out there and die, kid. Like, no, I'd stay with Tekadon. I feel like my chances are way better.
Side note, not because zero to do with the demise that happened at the end of season one, whatever. I still say Biscuit is one of the most Rob-like characters we've encountered in any anime. Just going to put that out there.
I fuck with Biscuit. Like, yeah. When Biscuit, like, when they, you know, paid tribute to him in the first episode, I was like, damn, my God, Biscuit.
Biscuit was like the voice of reason. He was the strategist. He was amazing. That's all. Sorry.
I appreciate it.
Ice.
Yeah, I'm rolling with my game.
Dip. Simple as that.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
No, I mean, I feel you. I feel like it's all situational based. I feel like if I'm born into this, I don't think you know anything else.
Yeah.
I feel like Kid Keenan will adjust very quickly. I feel like I've always adjusted very quickly to a lot of situations that I was in. So once I see like this is what it is, I'm like, all right, let's get it, man. I don't want my friend to die. I might want that revenge also. So yeah, I don't. It's tough, man. This anime is pretty fucking deep in the layers when you peel it back, to be honest.
For sure.
Yeah,
it's a lot.
Next question. Do you think there are times where success can hurt you just as much as it can help you? Rob.
Yeah, I think there are definitely times, and you know, I think that's what we're kind of seeing happen with Tekadon in general. It's like they're in a situation where they have to win every time, but like when you do that, you draw a lot of jealous eyes, and I think they're making a lot of enemies. I heard a quote like earlier this week. I think I was listening to it was an interview with actually Bryan Cranston, and somebody was asking him about like, you know, how do you like resent that, you know, you didn't get your success in your career, like as big as you were, like as you are now, like until later in your life. And he's like, honestly, like there's this old like Chinese proverb that's just like, may you have success early. And that's a curse, because it's just like you get your success before you're really able to like understand it or really like know what to do with it or really be able to, you know, take all that comes with it. And or even like you peak too early. So I think success can be a double-edged sword. Like, absolutely.
Ice.
Yeah. I think that's definitely, I've had many talks with Kenan about that when we talk about stand up and we talk about like blowing up. And I'm, you know, like I said last week, it's like, I want to be big. And he's just like, yo, you can get big, but like, are you ready though? Like, do you have an hour worth of material? Like, you can go out there and you can be the next best thing in comedy, but then you're not ready for that stage. And versus getting ready to Rob's point, like, you can get there, but if you're not ready for that, then you're not ready to do that. Then you end up going out faster than what you could have if you would have, you know, got your ducks in a row, been sharp, you know, maybe take an extra year or two, then get ready and go out there. Just like when people leave the NBA, I mean, excuse me, leave NCAA early and they're not ready. Some people are like, fam, you had a good March Madness, but outside of that, you know, when we really put the microscope on you, you needed some more weight. You needed to get your footwork better. So yeah, definitely success can harm you.
Yeah, I agree with that a lot, with that NCAA reference, because I was just watching a video on Derek Williams. He was the number two pick.
Yeah, Minnesota Timberwolves.
For Timberwolves. Yeah, and they had him like, yo, he gonna be a monster. He had the size, but then when they looked at him, he was in that transitional power forward period to where it's like he's not versatile enough.
Yeah,
you know, he's not fast enough for the traditional whatever. So I agree. And it comes to the stand up terms, I was telling Ice, it's like, bro, I was out there at a point where I was forced to do more time than I was comfortable doing, because I wasn't doing that much time at one point. And it was nerve wracking. It was giving me, I had my worst anxiety breakdown where I fucking cried, because I was like, dog, like, I'm about to fail miserably in this situation. And I pulled through, but dog, I've never shaken so much in my life off the anxiety because of that. And I mean, that's on a smaller scale, but I actually think, like Rob said, success is a double-edged sword, 100%. Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, to make it super anecdotal, like, first of all, I agree with everything Rob said. It's a double-edged sword. And everybody wants success when you're like young, like, you know, right, teenager, early 20s, whatever. I would have been a trash human being if I would have achieved like financial and like fame success at that point, simply because I wasn't finished developing as a human being.
Right.
You know, I still hadn't really established who I was. I still hadn't really I didn't have a foundation to be able to fall back to that was myself. Instead of like my family, whatever, they would have held me up and I would have fallen back. I would have been okay long term. But in that short term, I think I would have been screwed. And even right now, like, what's happening for me is that I'm experiencing success on a level at this moment. And it has taken more for me than building the company. Like, honestly, like, everybody's like, oh, it's so hard to be an entrepreneur and like start a company. And I agree. It's very difficult to do that. But to grow a company is significantly harder than starting a company. Trust me. There is just so many more variables and so many things going on, and you have to be ready for that. You have to have a team. You have to be prepared. You have to have a plan. Like, you can't just do stuff. And so I think that success in that sense that you're not ready for is more dangerous than, you know, the worst villain you could have, because at the end of the day, you're left looking at yourself and saying, I did this to myself.
Yeah.
All facts. You was cut that time close, Brendan. I'll tell you that. that's an amazing answer. And I 100% agree with that. Next question. Who's your ride or die that's not considered family. A lot of us have a ride or die person that we can go to. I know, I'm sure Brendan's going to go to his brother a lot of times, but you can't choose family. For me, it's probably my boy Rick. I've known my boy Rick since I was like 10 years old, 9, 10 years old. And I feel like he's a, you know, ask questions later person if we're in a situation where that we need to get out of it. It's just like, even if I started it, it's just like, let's fight our way up out of there. Ah, shit. And then he'd be like, all right, man. Why am I doing this? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But he's looking at it like safety first, getting us out of there. And even though we're the same age, I feel like he's an older brother in his life. I feel like he just naturally takes that role too. So he's gonna come to my defense regardless. So I would say, yeah, my homie Rick will always come to my defense at a drop of a dime, no matter what the situation is. Ice?
Yeah, my homie Jared.
Buffering Rob.
Right.
He buffered to her.
I was like, God damn, you know all our names, so I don't know what's going on.
They're literally on the screen.
Right. No, I'm going. I'm not looking at the screen. I'm looking at the timer. I'm looking at the questions.
Okay, it's all right. I'm just messing. It's easy. It's just fun to mess with you.
It'll be my homie Jared, you know, from St. Louis, my hometown, and just being with him. We've been in those situations, to Keenan's point, where it's like a lot of people say they have your back. A lot of people say they're your dog, but when shit hit the fan and it's time to be somebody's dog and be their ride or die, like he's came through in all those situations, and we've been in some fucked up situations. So he's shown and proven throughout our entire lives, and I hope that I reciprocated the same. So it'd be him, yeah.
Brittany?
So I'm going to give a quick list of names of people that will be on this list, because I have been without question blessed to have so many wonderful people in my life.
Wow,
and my friends. I'm going to say my boy B-Rad, Brad Salisbury. I'm going to say my boy Daniel Terry Wright. I'm going to say Tony Valentino. I'm going to say Rob. You know, I'm also going to say my boy Doc. So I'm going to put them on there. They would all fall into this category easily. But the person I'm picking in this one is Dominic. Dominic Bendijo. He is my business partner. He's also one of the most mysterious human beings I've ever met. Anytime there's any shady anything going on, I can call Dom, and for some reason he's an expert on it.
These are all like, true things.
Yeah. For no reason, he's an expert on whatever you call him. Whenever it's something weird or bad, or like, yo, something happened, like he's the one to call. He always has an answer for every situation, and he pulls up. Last night, I almost got killed, and he pulled up to be able to like save the day. He literally did. And like,
What happened, Brendan? You said you almost got killed?
My office was unfortunately locked to the point nobody could get into it. I had to try to shimmy my way in. I broke a window. And the moment I broke a window, security guard was there. Security guard was a piece of shit and was racist probably. It almost became a problem. Dom showed up, defused the situation. Bam. That's what happened.
No probably about it.
Still got it in time, too.
Twisty turned into Twister right there.
Yeah.
Gang, gang.
Rob?
My friend Jason, I would say, is my guy. I've known him since kindergarten. There have been times we've liked each other, been times we didn't like each other, but we've always just had each other's back. They're good times, they're bad. We both consider each other family. You know, I didn't have any other siblings. He had some tough times. We just kind of look at each other like brothers. And that's for life, for sure.
Just real quick, with these people that y'all say, would they say you?
I think they would, because I wasn't thinking of a list like Brennan did. But what would happen is I think they might have other people on their list that they might have been in with more stuff. Like they might have other, like Rick probably has other close homies or.
Most Rick just sounds like he's just like Brennan. He's just that kind of guy. Mm-hmm. There's just certain people that are just that kind of person that are just down ass motherfuckers. And if they decide you're one of their people they're down for, then they have a list of people they're down for. Yeah. So that for me, like those are the people who I named. I'm like, these are the people who are just those people who made me on their list, which by that space makes me put them on mine. You know what I'm saying?
For sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rob. Rob didn't say no other names. Right. But go ahead.
The question wasn't for a list, Brennan.
He didn't. After I did it, he was just like, yeah, that was real cool, Brennan. Like, so my boy over here.
I'll be honest with you. I didn't think of a list either. I just thought of one person. I could have put a list out too, but I was just like, oh, shit. What Brennan did, I was like.
No, you're on my list, man. All right, if I had to make a list, you'd be on it.
No, Rob, no.
Consolation ass prize, petty list.
Everybody get a trophy.
I asked asked you to marry me. I asked you to marry me, man.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean,
come on.
To clarify that, you asked him, yeah, to marry you, but yeah.
Oh, man. He has
Rob got down on bending knee to Brennan.
Rob had the best clapback for that. I didn't realize the shit I was talking right there. That was great.
Good Lord.
So, Brennan, I asked you to marry me and my wife. Like, yeah, you did. All yeah. right, fine.
Next question. What is your favorite mech of all time? Ice.
The motherfucking Megazord. That's my shit. Like, I don't know if that technically qualifies as a mech, but when I know there's the wide spectrum of mechs, the Megazord is my shit. As a kid, I was a huge Power Ranger fan. Tommy, Green Ranger, all of them separate were dope, but when they came together and made that Megazord, especially when they got either the White Tiger or the Green Dragon on it, like, that shit had me. I don't know what an orgasm was at that point in time, but that's probably the closest that I got to it is when they made that fucking Megazord. And that's just will all time be my favorite. I always wanted to learn how, like, be inside of them, inside of the Megazord and just go crazy. So, yeah, that's definitely mine.
I guess I'm going with that. If this falls in the same realm also, Voltron. I feel like for me, I always love that form feet. Legs, form arms, form torso. That shit was just so dope to me as a kid. Voltron is just such near and dear to my heart. I guess, I believe it was before Power Rangers.
Yep.
So that just hit me in a whole different world. So I got to go with Voltron. Brennan?
All right. So I had to look up the definition of mech to make sure I was good. So you're right, Rob. I mean, Ice. Mech is just a giant pilotable robot. Yeah. That's the full definition of what a mech
Perfect.
Is. And so my mech, I don't know if I don't remember because I watched it as a kid. I'm just remembering, like, what's the hypest I've ever been for a mech? And I'm going to say is Big O.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah, we haven't mentioned that show.
Big O.
Oh my God. I felt that in my soul. I'm like, yo, if he say Big O, I'm shutting everything down.
Big O used to give out hand sandwiches to motherfuckers.
Oh my God.
Every time Big O showed up, you knew what was about to happen. Like, it was just like, oh man, the world's about to end. Something bad's going on. The worst situation. We can't call Big O. And he's like, but I did it. Mm. Big O shows up like, what? You see this? You see this elbow? Like, it was a lot.
Big O is
my answer partially because the theme song will get you hyped just from the show itself. But every time Big O showed up, the theme song would play when he showed up.
Yeah.
And
which is always dope.
Things were got after. Who has seen Big O? Have you two seen it? Because y'all didn't get excited.
I have not seen Big O.
Oh my
I haven't
God.
Seen it like that, but I've seen episodes.
Man.
Okay, well.
It
might need to be a pick. Like, real talk. I haven't thought about Big O in a while. But now that I said it out loud, I wish I would have. Okay. That's it.
I'm kind of scared to watch it, though, because I don't know if it hold up.
100%. I 100% agree.
I want to keep Big O like I thought Big O was, because if we go back and it's trash,
terrified.
I'm going to be
absolutely
hurt.
Terrified. Terrified. Y'all hurt my soul with shampoo.
It's basically like if Bruce Wayne was in an anime, that's like Big O, basically. Like the character that Big O plays, that controls Big O. Oh my God! Yeah. Shut it down. That's Big O is my guy.
I'm gonna go a little outside the box with it. I'm gonna say the Hulkbuster armor actually from Marvel. I don't feel like the regular Iron Man suit; those don't count. But like, you can put an Iron Man suit inside the Hulkbuster suit. Like that counts. That's a big thing. I love that. That's like one of the best parts of Age of Ultron is like when he has to go toe to toe with the Hulk in wherever they were. I think Lagos or something, or no, it was just the African coast or something. But like the fact that he could like detach arms and like he had a satellite that would bring that in, or even during like Infinity War, like you had Bruce Banner going into the final fight just rocking the Hulkbuster armor, just messing up the Children of Thanos. That was a pretty good suit.
Yeah that was hard.
Okay, go. So next question. I mean, you have what's his name, Ogon?
Orga.
The main
Orga.
Orga. He's been doing a lot of business deals, and he's confident in getting these deals done. Like, he doesn't care if he fully trust you or not, because he always has it in the back of his head, we don't fully trust you anyways, motherfucker, so we got a backup plan for that. Would you do a business deal with someone you don't trust? Brennan?
I personally believe that trust is the foundation of all forms of relationship. Some form of it. And if I can't trust, like, the thing is, obviously contracts are there to protect in the case of a breach of that trust in some way, shape, or form. But for me, if there isn't a baseline piece of trust to form some form of partnership or deal with somebody, then I won't make a contract with you. Because there's, like, no matter what you put into a contract, there's always something somebody can do to harm you after you expose yourself or allow yourself to be vulnerable towards them, and having some form of partnership deal where you are starting to become codependent in some way, shape, or form. So I believe there has to be a form of trust. If I have no trust for you, then that means we have no business together. I don't care what the deal is.
Rob.
Yeah, no, I agree with a lot of what Brennan said, but I'll just say, like, there have definitely been, like, if I'm desperate enough, maybe, but if not, like, I'd really prefer not to for sure. Like, I agree. You trust is a very foundational thing when you want to make those relationships, especially when it comes to something like your business. But obviously, you know, Orga himself is in a position here where, like, I don't know, outside of his group, like, is there somebody he can make a deal with that he could trust? So, like, he really is truly a desperate dude. If I'm in his situation, I might make some of those deals. Absolutely. Just do what I have to do to, you know, protect my people and survive to see the next day.
Ice.
I mean, to Rob's point, I would prefer it, but being real with the entertainment business, I would have to sometimes. Yeah. I think if I have put a film in the Sundance and somebody wants to buy it for $10 million, I don't know these motherfuckers, but they offer me $10 million for my film. So it's like, if the money's right, if something's, you know, if that's the amount of money that I had in my mind and it meets up with them, I don't know them, so I don't trust them. But at the same time, if it's a big theater, a big company that I know and they're willing to buy my film, I'm a go with it just because, you know, other factors. But I don't necessarily, like, trust you, but I have to get it done. Yeah. That'll probably be the easy. I look at it from an entertainment perspective. Obviously, in a perfect world, you would want to trust somebody and do a deal with somebody that you trust. But in entertainment, a lot of those times, especially as a creator, you have the time and autonomy to do it yourself and just go that route. But a lot of times you might need that other person. And 9 times out of 10, you don't know. And if you don't know somebody, you don't trust them.
Yeah, I got to go with Rob. I understand what Brennan's saying exactly. But I think, and some of these deals, especially the ones that Orga's getting into, he doesn't really have really a choice. He just has to make a decision. Be like, look, here's a backup plan. If they just goes off the rails, kill these motherfuckers that are here. Mm. So I think that's how I would go about it. If it's somebody that I don't really trust, I'm going to always have either an escape route to where I can get my people out of there safe, business-wise and myself business-wise, or, yeah, that'd be the best way. Because I think some of these business deals, too, when it comes to, like, billionaires, too, they'll kill you. You know what I'm saying? If they need to, like, we can't physically get out of this contract, so put a little something in a drink, like the little assassin TikTok's been going around, the little something in his water. You know, I just watched another movie that I won't talk about, but yeah, man. I feel like people would do anything to get you out of there anyway. So I never fully trust anybody I go into business with anyway. True. I'm gonna always have a little bit of okay. It's like maybe the most 90 to 10%. Next question.
What's up, Brendan? What you saying, Brendan?
No, I just want to add one super quick thing. That I'm not saying trust 100 million%. I'm saying have some level of trust. Second thing is, Ice, I'd like you to reference to you two things. Number one, earlier in this conversation, early success and how it's not good. And number two, my answer that I said to that question as well. That's it.
Yeah. Next question. Do you have any predictions for characters' deaths?
Buffering ass Keenan.
Because I'm pissed.
Yeah.
Do you have any predictions for character deaths?
I interrupted him. I give him that. I interrupted him.
Go ahead, Rob. I know not everybody can answer this question because I know some people have seen it, some people have had it spoiled for them. But as far as character deaths, I feel like Orga and Mikazuki aren't gonna make it. One or both of them. And I have some serious doubts about Atra as well. And personally, I think Takaki probably isn't going to make it either. But those are my big picks right now. I think we're going to see a lot more main character deaths on this show than we're used to seeing, personally. So I'm saying Mikazuki, I'm saying Orga, and I'm saying Takaki.
And Takaki is who?
He's the blonde kid on Earth.
The one that had the homie that died, that killed himself.
No.
No,
it's he's the guy that's running the show on Earth, like the guy who's like the adult is betraying him.
Yeah. And he's like, hey, let me talk to Mars. And he's like, they're busy.
Oh, that guy. Yeah. The short guy. Just little.
Yeah.
Who, Rob, what's the guy's name that I was referencing, though? The one that had the homie that killed himself?
Oh, Hush. The dude Hush, that. The new guy.
The 17 year old.
Yeah.
Either him or Mika is going to die because they got that plot going for some reason. They're not going to keep interjecting him and giving him the storyline if he not going to die or take Mika's spot when Mika dies. Like there's got to be something going on. One of those guys are going to die. From a writing perspective, I feel like that has to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like this anime in general just has fucking high stakes. Like I don't know if they necessarily care, to be honest. So
that was a funny statement, bro. I feel like this anime in general just has high stakes.
Yeah.
I mean for real, because I feel like these are kids and they're killing off kids already. So anybody in the words of myself, I guess, anybody can get it. That's how I feel. Brennan.
I hope all of you are having a wonderful day, and I think we should probably do a death pool.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That would be a great one, even with the fans too. If they haven't seen it, yeah. I'm not gonna do a death pool. Next question: do you think shows like this influence or deter kids from joining the military? It's a good question. Ice.
I think it deters them because it shows the realism of them. I think when you're making anything in the form of war, I feel like you can really, quote unquote, fumble the bag when it comes to that, because you can make war seem fun. And there's a lot of shows and both live action and animated that make war just seem like a fun time. Nobody dies. The good guys win. And then we put our flag and it's over. And I think shows like these are the realism, like, hey, war, you know, is about brotherhood and partnership and teamwork, but motherfuckers die. And there's the repercussions of that. And I think shows, you know, stuff like this, stuff like Saving Private Ryan, Dunkirk, movies, TV, television shows like that, 1917, like stuff like that shows like, hey, there's the other side of this. Like war is not the glamorous thing that people think it is. Put on this uniform and just die for your country or your gang or whatever. It's not that. You lose people, and then the effects of that are very deep. And I feel like this deters people from war, especially kids seeing this.
I mean, I feel like I kind of agree and disagree, because I feel like when it comes to cartoons, sometimes people don't necessarily correlate that. You look at something like even video games, like. Mm-hmm. I don't think kids are looking at Call of Duty and being like, I can't go to war. They're like, man, I could probably go to war and smack cat because I'm so nice with the sniper and shit like that. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're putting, at least for me anyways, I can kind of put myself in both situations, but I feel like Saving Private Ryan, I can't put it on the same level as this. Like watching real people die compared to watching an animated series and then knowing that Saving Private Ryan comes from true events. That's just different to me. That's just. I mean, I can't put on this. That right there would deter me for sure. Mm. Watch Saving Private Ryan.
Just that first 5 minutes.
That shit was just wild. I'm just like, bro, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
So, this particular show necessarily, if I'm a kid, it might even be a little bit glorified in a sense to me. That's just how I feel. Rob?
No, I see what you're saying. I think the show's intention is to not make it glorified, but I think at least there are parts, especially leading up to it, in this middle portion, where it kind of can seem like they're winning, you know, and a lot of the main characters are surviving. And I think it's going to be one of those things that, like, once you get the complete message, I think by the end of this, it's going to come back around and there's going to be some real dark times for Tekadon. And maybe when we get to those spots, but like, at least right now, like, they're just winning all the time. And it kind of seems like they're having a good time doing it. You know, little bits here and there, you got people going like, oh man, like, you know, people are dying out there. But I don't know, like that. It seems to me like that, at least so far, like even the dude going like, hey, like, you know, spray paint this on my mech. Like, cause like, I want this to be my kill count. Like there's still like those moments where I feel like they're kind of building it up. And I think by the end of it, you know, it'll come back around. But for now, like, I think they're still kind of hyping it up a bit.
Brennan?
I don't think I really have too much to add based upon what you guys said. I think that this show definitely doesn't make war look fun, but it could be doing better in the sense of, like you're saying, Private Ryan. I think that I don't think this would ever be a show that somebody would say, I want to go become a soldier because I watched this show.
True.
I don't think that's a statement that would ever be true. But I don't think the statement that I didn't go to war and become a soldier would be true after watching the show either. So I think it's a neither nor, because I mean, and the reality is what makes this show seem fun and cool is these motherfuckers jump in giant robots and fight each other.
Yep.
Like that is not what war looks like. There is the death side of that. And the, you know, people die and it's brutal and it's horrible and child soldiers and all that, but they're still in giant robots. There's just a level to it. It's like, yeah, I might die, but have you ever flown through space in a giant robot before? Exactly. So that's it.
All right. So last question. If you were in charge of the Earth Tech and Enforcers as a teenager, would you have stood up to adults or adults who wouldn't let you speak to Orga? Or what would you have done, Brennan?
I think this situation is so well written. Because if you think about the way that most people are raised, is that when you are under the age of 18, 19, 20, then you are to look up to and respect the authority of the adults around you. Now, this show kind of flips that narrative on its head, because these kids have to look out for each other themselves. And they do a very decent job of that, but they're still very obviously children. And so putting this guy, what's his name, Rob? I know, is it Takaki?
Takaki.
Putting Takaki in this situation is just really telling to me. And the way that this show is written is that, like, what would you have done? Because I don't know is my honest answer. Is like, this is a really tough situation. Do I trust this adult that my supervisor already trusts to be in this position, that's what his job is to do, is to handle communication? Or do I tell him to shut up and bring my homies with me with their guns and say, put him on the phone? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. Because it's like, as he says, like, when you stop trusting who is part of your family and who's rocking our symbol, then where do we go from there? And so I think that this was a really, really, really shitty situation that was defined really well by the writers and director. And I don't know. I hope that I would, because on one side, I hope that I would have pulled up with the homies with the guns and just said, nah, I need to talk to my mans. But on the other side, like, that could have been the move that got you taken out of all the position you're in, because you're not following the chain of command. So I don't know. You know what I'm saying? It's a messed up situation.
I'll tell you something, Brennan's been cutting this shit close, like within a second. It's incredible how he's doing.
Maybe like to play off the Oscar band, like they're raising up the horns of their lips, getting ready to just like play him off. But
I'm like,
it's a Justin
Timberlake. He just does it. It's funny. I didn't go as deep as Brennan at first until he said that, but because at first I would be like, yo, if this is a situation that I feel like is dire, fuck that. I'm calling it. Like
17-year-old Keenan, though. You know.
Yeah. And what Brennan's saying, like, yeah, you can now mess up the chain of command. You can now be like, all right, now everything is just messed up, and it can make itself for a shitty situation going forward for everybody. I still feel like I might end up just being like, if it's something that's dire that I need to do, I'm calling that shot, I think. That's just me personally. Ice?
I think what it really comes down to, you got to know your homies. You got to know that Orga, what would he do in that situation? And for instance, if I was Rob or somebody, and a person that Brennan just hired was like, hey, we got to open up this account and spend $10,000 on a new wing for the new studio, I'd be like, Brennan wouldn't do that. Like, he's financially responsible. Like, I know my homie. I know Brennan. Let me talk to Brennan and make sure he made that call. Well, he's busy. He's doing stuff. He said make the call. I'm like, nah, I got to talk to Brennan, because you just, at those times, you have to know your homies. And I think in that situation, you got to know Orga would not do, like, what would Orga do in this situation? He wouldn't just tell us to chill. Like, he would tell us, like, we need to come there. And I think that's really what it come down to in that situation, where I would make the call to pull up with the homies and be like, no, let me talk to him, because that shit just don't sound like Orga to me.
And then know who the information is coming from. If Rob's telling that information, you might do it, because you might be like, Brennan said do this, or whatever the case may be. Mm. So you might end up buying that wing or paying for that wing because it came from Rob. Rob?
Yeah, I mean, I understand that the situation that they put Takaki in, I understand where he's coming from, but me personally, no, I would have been like, give me the phone. Like, I definitely would have pulled up with everybody, because I'm like, you guys raised the right, like, similar points. Like, if it were a situation today where, like, you know, we were doing something and, like, Tony Valentino came up and is just like, hey, Brennan said yada, 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 I'm like, okay, that probably came from Brennan. But if, like, somebody I don't know that just showed up that is from outside the organization said something, even if it sounds like something Brennan said, I'm probably still going to call Brennan. Yes. And
which has actually happened before.
Actually happened before. I want to hear it like from them. And for, I get like why Takaki, you know, is wants that level of trust and wants to believe that he can trust that guy. But like the fact that he's been exploited by adults before, that he doesn't know this dude, that he's actually a Taiwaz rep from outside the organization. I'm like, no, I'm not fucking taking orders from you. Chad said, I'm in charge. Give me the phone.
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah, I feel that. All right.
So that's I'm in charge.
That's the end of the question portion for our wrap-ups. I'm going to do about 2 to 2.5 minutes. So we can get it under the hour 10. First up, likes, dislikes, and score. Ice.
Honestly, coming into this, I wasn't a fan of watching this again. I was just like, bro, I just didn't want to. I wasn't a fan of the first season. It had its moments, but overall, I just wasn't a fan. And I think watching these the first 2 to 3 episodes were brutal because it's very dialogue heavy. But the action was warranted. Overall, I do want to see the rest of, you know, how these next 5 episodes play out. But if it plays out like the other 5 did, then I'm just, you know, I'm not going to be as invested. I just want to see what happens. I just want to see who dies. Really, that's what's my main thing. It's like, I want to see who dies. And if I'm right with who I'm guessing. But yeah, that's just pretty much a least favorite part was just the dialogue heavy parts. We were just like, but I understand, like, from just writing in general, you have to set the stage, even though it's the second season and you know the characters, you still have to set the stakes, which are very high. So I understand all that. I let that shit be a pass for the most part, but it was still very, very dialogue laden for those 5 episodes. So that was my least favorite. Most favorite part was when Mizuki just pulled up and just shot the fuck out that dude. He was just like, nah, fam, you don't have our money. A lot of animes, they would have took a different route. Okay, well, you got X amount of days to get our money, or you would have did this. Like, a lot of shows wouldn't have went, the main character just blast his fucking head off. So for him to be like, yeah, all right, you ain't got it, fuck you, we out. And that was like, okay, that was like, yo, we not. And just in case you forgot from season 1, we don't fucking play here. Like, it's not a game over here. And I think they really let that be known. So yeah, for these stretch of episodes, I give it a 5,800.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like this kind of turned up a little bit more in season 1. Just the state, yeah, killing a human right in its face,
yeah,
facts, instead of in a machine. I say, so for me, what I liked about this show is that I like that the fact that the teenagers are the kids in just general, they don't take no shit really. They don't take no, as a whole for this show, they don't take no shit at all. And I like that shit. I like that in here. I like that a lot in here. I would say for me, my dislikes, this show runs slow for me.
Yeah.
This show runs extreme. Like, as a whole, it runs extreme. I feel like this was like 4 hours of TV that I had to watch.
Facts.
When we watched X-Men, even though it's probably not as good as overall as this show, that shit ran fast. Like, it felt like it was like 15 minute episodes.
True.
These feel like a good 45 minutes an episode apiece. But it's not necessarily boring. It's like, damn, it's dragging a little bit, but it's just like, I don't hate it. So that's what I least like. But I will say overall, the stakes are just so high in the show. Accidentally seeing a spoiler of the show, I have to watch this show to see how everything happens now. I have to see how everything happens. And now it's like, I'm mad that I saw the spoiler, but now I'm excited to see how the fuck is going to go down.
Was it a death?
I had to see how it's going to go down.
Yeah, don't speak on it.
And to be honest with you, it made me realize when everybody was saying like, man, this shit is emotional at season 2. Now we're going to see how this leads up to how people are saying that that's going to happen. So I would say overall, my score, I would give a 6,200 for this these stretches. Rob?
Yeah, I guess it's just as far as like my favorite part, you know, the meeting was probably my favorite part, but to pick something different, I actually had a really fun time watching that battle with like them going up against the space pirates. Like, I thought that was pretty cool. Just the way it was paced and like the way they had the stakes, you know, kind of rising and just like, we have to kind of play this battle this way. I actually had a really fun time watching it. There were definitely slow parts, but I would say that my least favorite part was kind of like sometimes they just have these like check-in moments with the characters that honestly, it's like I was doing this, the synopsis. I was like, I don't need to put this in there because it doesn't really matter. Like there were some scenes where like they're having like a short conversation in the cafeteria between Mikazuki and Orga. And it just feels like this is just moments for them to like kind of check in with these characters, but they don't really say anything, if that makes any sense, or say anything new. And so those. There are those sort of scenes that just sort of slow it down a little bit. But overall, I'm actually really enjoying the show again. I thought season one was okay. My biggest gripe with it is that there was so much, like, obviously they had some losses, but like they just won all the time. But what I think is interesting here in the second season is that that victory could start to be their downfall. And I'm really starting to, because at first I was just like, damn, like they just keep winning. Like you need your characters to fail for them to learn and grow. But I think this could be a situation where it's that success that kind of becomes their undoing and like what they're willing to do and what they're like, because number one, like that meeting situation was number one, badass. But number two, like these kids are becoming like literal like mafiosos, like they are becoming like bad people in a way. But like they justify it by what it's for. And I find that really interesting. And like you were saying, Keenan, like it's a deep show with a lot of layers and I'm really enjoying that. So yeah, five episodes in, I'm actually liking the series more than I think I had before, even in the first season. I'm going to give it a 7,000.
Okay.
Oh.
Wow.
Ready? All right. So yeah, I mean, I agree with actually Rob's assumption, pretty much everything Rob said to a T almost. Like, I don't even know what to say now. But I think that, you know, the thing that I liked the most easily was it wasn't actually Mika shooting the guy. It was Orga saying what he said, you know, when Orga said, he's like, hey, if you don't got the money, we can send you to heaven to apologize to our fallen comrades for what you put us through.
Yeah.
But what made that statement mean even more to me was actually the conversation Cordelia was having with the girl, little girl that cooks for everybody, and how she was blaming herself. And the little girl's like, you can't. And she's like, you don't understand. If I would have been cool with this guy, none of this would have happened. You know what I'm saying? It's like understanding that position of power and leadership and like being able to be someone as famous, as influential as her is like simply slighting one person one time means so much to them versus what it meant to you.
So like the dude on 300, the hunchback guy, when they played him out.
Yeah, exactly. It's like even worse though, because the hunchback guy, they treated like shit. Mm-hmm. You know, and said, you can't do anything. Like she wasn't even treating him like shit. She was just like, hey, I just can't do that. Mm-hmm. And he was just like, take this personally. Everybody dies, you know, kind of thing. She should die. Like he came after her life because she said, I simply won't show up next to you somewhere.
Yeah.
Like it's some serious shit. So I really thought that was dope. My least favorite part of the whole thing is every time they talk about farming, I do not care.
Yep.
Every time they bring up farming, I'm just like, as Rob said in his cap, these motherfuckers are never going to be farmers.
Yeah.
Like this is never going to, and I think that's like a glorification of how warriors always are portrayed in movies and media is that when they're not fighting, they're farming.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you think about it, you know, like everybody, Gladiator, you know what I'm saying? The guy from Gladiator, like you throw the old school guys, like the guy from even 300. It's like, you look at these actual warriors and it's like, every time there's a warrior, it's like, well, you're not killing motherfuckers. What you're doing is like, I'm raising food to feed people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, exactly. which I didn't realize until this moment. That's like a common thing. So overall, I give it same score as Rob, 7,000. I think it still has a lot of room to grow, but I think that they built really well upon the foundation that was already there. I think the dialogue was really well done. Actually, it didn't really drag for me because it brought back, so like the way that they are able to bring things back and forward and be able to set up the stakes that make the battles that much more interesting. And even more so the way the battles, like Rob was saying, the way they're paced. This is some of the best paced battles that I've seen, considering how many elements are involved in these battles. If you think about all the other anime we watch, when people get to hands, it's normally like one main person versus everybody. Whereas this one, it's like this whole army team versus this whole army team with these stakes on these people over here that are affecting the way that they're acting here, and the way they're positioning is as important as the way that they're shooting or slashing. And I'm just like, that is what real war is like. And so I'm like, I like that they're actually able to give you that feeling that you're in the cockpit with the commander. Like, oh shit. Like, okay, what do we do now? So I love that. So 7,000, having a good time.
Defend that pick, Brennan.
Call it defending a pick. I call it that.
I don't know. I don't know what's defending yet. I mean, at least right, as of right now, I don't feel like 7,000 is high at all. I don't feel like it's too low.
I think that's right in the money.
I feel like their scores are pretty solid. I feel like, yeah, that's pretty good. So let it. So do you guys want to do a pool, like you said, a death pool?
100. I don't know how to do a death pool.
Me neither, but it'd be fun. I would do it.
Let's look into it afterwards. Yeah, let's talk about it afterwards. But yeah, guys, hopefully we could figure it out if it's easy to do. And I can orchestrate it because I'm the only one who can't participate. Right. And Keenan, actually.
Well, I actually can participate.
Yeah, Keenan can. Well, Keenan just knows spoilers, man. Like, he's a hoe.
Well, when I look for spoilers myself, that's when I don't give a shit.
I'm not here
when
for excuses.
When a spoiler comes into my face.
Out of all four of us, it's just you that happens to run into it.
Right.
That's funny, man.
Spoiler. Let us know what y'all think of the show, the first 5 episodes in the comment section. Answer all the questions in the comment section. You want to drop your stuff? Go ahead, Ice.
Super Bowl prediction, anybody?
Oh, yeah, Super Bowl. I was going to ask that earlier. I forgot to ask that. Super Bowl prediction?
We're recording this episode on Super Bowl Sunday. It is before the game, for the record.
Right.
Yes. Go ahead.
I got Chiefs.
Chiefs. Yeah, I'm going. This is Black History Month, baby. Yeah. Tom Brady. If it wasn't Black History Month, Tom Brady, you know, I would give you the nod. But I gotta go with Pat Mahomes, baby. I'm sorry, Rob.
I'm going with the Chiefs. Fuck Tom Brady.
Oh yeah. I'm like, why the fuck do you like Tom Brady?
I don't fucking like Tom Brady. No, fuck him.
Yeah. Who's your football team, Rob?
I grew up in a Giants house, so my dad's big into the Giants.
Y'all have taken down Brady a few times.
Oh, I love that. I fucking love the Eli Manning, dumb face looking Eli Manning twice took out Tom Brady. It's my favorite thing in sports. I love Eli Manning just for that.
Brennan, your prediction?
I want the Patriots. I'm not the Patriots. Ha! I want the Buccaneers to win, but I think the Chiefs are going to win.
Yeah.
The only reason I want them to win is, and as you know, I'm not necessarily a Tom Brady fan directly, but I am a fan of greatness in general and the legacy that this man is building. And so I'm just like, yo, like as of now, even if he loses this game, he's still the greatest football player of all time.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, he doesn't need this ring.
Yeah, Rob can hate him all he wants, but he's going to respect that motherfucker's name.
No, like, he has
6 rings, and he brought us at 40, 2 years old? He brought another team to the championship in his first year there. True. Like, you can't say shit to this man.
Fucking hate him. Fucking hate Tom Brady. Fucking hate Tom Brady.
Man, hey, I just said he either has lovers or haters, man. Also, too, guys, I've been doing the week cap for Attack on Titan. So keep in touch with those. I'm trying to knock one out for this week also for the episode 67. So
I'm not ready for that episode.
Yeah, hope y'all have been enjoying them. Everybody ready to drop your stuff?
No, we didn't drop your stuff. You can find me at the greatest fucking anime podcast in the entire world.
I knew it was coming because he didn't do it yet. I was like, he going to need to do a Super Bowl prediction or something.
But you can also find me at IceDomagallon on Instagram.
Right.
RV Danger on Instagram, RV Danger 44 on Twitter. You're safe, Brennan. Brennan, you're safe.
At Brennan the Best on Instagram.
Say it again?
At Brennan the Best on Instagram.
It's not Producer Face, is it?
No, it's Brennan the Best.
Brennan the Best. Oh, I thought you said Mr. Producer Face.
I didn't.
Keenan Baker on every single thing, on all platforms, animation podcast and everything. Hit that Cash App animation podcast so we can start getting more stuff to y'all. Like I said, we're going to have a Patreon coming soon. We just got to get stuff together and, you know, wait for this pandemic to kind of slow down a little bit so we can to do it. And we thank you for tuning in to another episode of Animation. We out.
And so anime was solved forever.